How's it going, everyone? And welcome back. Again, I have to apologize for not uploading on a consistent basis. I have new opportunities going on in my personal life, and I'm trying to figure out how to balance that between work and the podcast. I will figure it out. Just bear with me a little longer. And again, I do apologize. I have also been talking with someone I work with, and they said that they're willing to come onto the podcast and have a conversation at some point. So I'm also trying to figure out how to make that work as well. With all that said, I thought that we would talk about something that's inevitable in the EMS field, and that is death. So stick around and we'll discuss it. When you decide to work in any medical profession, you are going to see death at some point. If you decide to work in the emergency medical field, you're going to put yourself in situations where you will 100% see death at some point. And seeing someone that is dead for the first time, other than at a funeral, you're never going to forget it. You know, I still remember mine, and we're going to talk about that a little later. But death is, it's a part of life, and sometimes there will be nothing you can do about it. There will be some times when you show up, and there will be no helping them. Either they've been dead for a while, their heart has no electrical activity present, or they have injuries not compatible with life. In situations like that, you can only be there in support for the family and be there for them during their first stages of grieving. It's difficult to be around the family when they're first told, you know, their family member or friend has died. Where I work, when someone is pronounced dead on scene, we find their primary care physician's phone number, we give them a call. If they answer, we tell them, you know, their patient has died, and normally the doctor knows what the patient has been going through medically and will sign off on the death certificate. If the doctor signs off on the death certificate, then we wait on scene for whichever funeral home service the family has picked out to come and retrieve the body. If the family hasn't made any funeral arrangements, we have a rotation list of different funeral homes that we call, and they will send out their people to retrieve the body. Now, if the primary care physician does not answer the phone or denies signing the death certificate, then we leave the body in the custody of the police department or the sheriff's office, and the medical examiner is called, and the situation is taken care of through either the police or sheriff's office. You can expect to be on scene waiting for the funeral home with the family for, you know, over an hour. Those guys who come pick up the bodies, they're on call. They, you know, have their own personal lives, and they get a phone call from their boss saying, hey, this is the address you got to go to pick up the body. They then, you know, have to get dressed in a suit and tie, look presentable, and come out to the house. So you are there on scene with the family during their first realization that their loved one is dead, and you are there trying to help them get through it. All you can do is offer kind words to them. You can say things like, I'm so sorry for your loss, or I wish there was more we could do. Things like that, trying to just give a little bit of reassurance. Now, when someone dies, you will usually get dispatched out as a cardiac arrest. When you get on scene, you bring all your equipment into the house because on every cardiac arrest call, we intend to work it until otherwise determined by the paramedic. When the paramedic calls time of death, all your equipment is still in the house. As the EMT, what I do is I will grab an extra sheet off the stretcher. I will grab an extra sheet off the stretcher. And, you know, I always make sure I have an extra sheet. You can never, ever have enough extra sheets. They are just so useful. So just whenever you're at the hospital, grab a couple more and throw them on the stretcher. Anyway, I'll take an extra sheet and I'll cover the body and I'll take all equipment back to the ambulance just to get it out of the way. But before I bring everything back, you know, I make sure my partner is going to be okay in the house by himself for a couple minutes, because it's going to take a little bit to get the equipment into the ambulance by yourself. So I make sure he's okay with it. He doesn't feel awkward or concerned about anything. And so then after I put up all the equipment, I get back into the house. I help gather any information about the patient, because the paramedic is usually on the computer trying to type in other information and work on the report. But I also accompany any of the family members that would like to see the body. And it's pretty difficult, because that's when, you know, they really start to cry, and sometimes they don't want to accept it, but you can't blame them, because it's a surreal experience, and it's a surreal experience for anyone, especially someone who doesn't see death every day. Now, how do you, as someone who works in healthcare, deal with it? And honestly, I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. Everyone deals with death and traumatic situations differently. There's no one specific way to process what happens. The only advice that I would give you is to not suppress it. You know, talk to someone about it. I use this podcast to talk about my experiences, because I don't need my family knowing some of the details about what I see. You know, I might tell them what happens at work, but there's just some things that they don't need to know, and that's where the podcast comes in for me. Even if nobody listened to this, I would still do the podcast, because I can talk about whatever I want to without making somebody else cry, or have someone judge me, or have to wonder if somebody I'm talking to is really listening to me. So this podcast for me is how I get to vent and complain about my emotions, basically. Now, with all that said, now comes my first experience with death. I was in my third hospital clinical as an EMT student in school still, when they transported a cardiac arrest in. It was an older lady. I mean, she was probably somewhere in her 70s, and ROSC was regained in the field, so they decided to transport. Now, ROSC, which is spelled R-O-S-C, and that stands for Return of Spontaneous Circulation, which means they got a pulse back and cardiac activity back in the patient after CPR was administered. So they transport emergently to the hospital, and the patient dies again in the ambulance en route. I remember, you know, waiting in the ER room for them to wheel the patient in. There was me, another student from my class, and two paramedic students from another school. We were all in the room waiting to do compressions. I mean, we were like standing in line back in like middle school at lunch, but we were all waiting to do compressions. They wheel the patient in, and we rotate in the line between people doing compressions. You know, I still remember the patient's face, the family crying, and I remember taking her down to the morgue afterwards. I also remember the first death I saw in the field. It was also as an EMT student. We were called out for a cardiac arrest, and we get on scene. I walk through the door and see the wife doing CPR. Me as a student, you know, being very eager and knowing I don't know the equipment that well and I can't set it up as fast as we need it, I jumped straight to compressions. As I started, I didn't feel the chest move at all, which was a little weird, because I remember on the lady in the hospital, you know, I could feel her chest moving whenever I did a compression. But his didn't. So in my mind, I was like, okay, maybe I just need to do it a little harder. So I pushed harder with no change. The paramedic puts on the defibrillation pad and touches the patient's face. And, you know, he immediately tells me to stop. Later on, on scene, the paramedic brings me back over to the body. You know, he goes, here, you know, touch the patient's face. And it was ice cold. You know, that's a feeling I will never forget because people are not meant to feel that cold. And after the call, the paramedic explained to me why he decided to not continue CPR, you know, made sure I understood what obvious signs of death were, and talked me through what he expected of me if he did decide that he wanted to continue CPR. These things are going to stick around with you. It's unfortunate, but you're going to have to be okay with that. You know, that's all I have for this week. Like I said, I apologize for not being consistent. I will get better about it, and I will try to keep my recordings, you know, a week or two ahead in advance if I can. You can always message me on Instagram at EMT_life_podcast. Message me about anything, questions, stories, your own experiences. If it takes me a while to answer, I apologize, but I will always answer any message I get over there. But as always, I hope everyone has a great weekend, and God bless.